The views and opinions expressed by the guests on this podcast are that of their own. In no way, shape, or form do they reflect the official policy or position of the Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack.
You've descended into the Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack, a commercial diving podcast by working divers for divers.
This episode is brought to you by Ocean Eye Inc. Ocean Eye's main focus is you, the commercial diver. With industry-leading end-to-end service and expertise, they got everything you need for your next dive job. You need your gear maintenance or repaired? Need some new products or consulting? Ocean Eye's got you covered. Give them a call at 610-621-5750 or visit them online at oceaneyeinc.com.
Holy moly, we're here at Poseidon Brewing. This is the Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack on location, reporting live from Poseidon Brewing in Ventura, California. How's everybody doing tonight? Zelby Diver. And as always, my trusty brethren.
Oh, I thought you were going to say psychic. I was going to get so pissed. I was going to be like, fuck off.
No, man. Brethren. We're brethren.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Johnny. Here's Johnny.
Hello, everybody.
We have an amazing special guest. Another one of our brethren. Ms. Lisa Correa. It sounds like a fighter name, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost time. You can't say it's time because then we'll get sued by the buffers.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So welcome, Lisa Correa, to the Dive Shack.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks for accepting.
I know. It's like, you know, sometimes we pull these big names and it's like,
right.
It's like, how do we do it? You know, and it was helped with one of our friends and listeners. You'll know her as a Deep Sea Dandelion, and that's all we're going to give her her identity. She is here tonight.
Yeah, she posts a lot of stuff, a lot of good stuff.
So I want to give a big shout out to her.
Yes, for sure. She's my, I think she's going to have to be the president of my fan club.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, nice.
Because I got a lot of haters also, but I really appreciate her posting. And I'm learning a lot also, so interesting stuff she puts out.
Lisa, again, thanks for coming on. So tell us about your dive career. You are a CB diver. We have not had a CB diver on the Dive Shack before. This is a first.
No, we haven't. Well, you know, let's do a little even further back here. For those of the listeners who have nothing to do with diving and nothing to do with military, what is CB?
What is
in the Navy? What is
CBs in the Navy? So we are
can-dos.
Yes, we're the civil engineering construction force for the Navy. We have about seven rates. Yeah, we're a bunch of construction rates, literally. Welders, steel workers, equipment operators. I'm a mechanic. We have a plumber, high voltage electricians. We have engineering aid. Builder. So we do we build boat ramps for diving applications. You know, we build boat ramps. We also do a lot of humanitarian stuff. So we learn how to build buildings and stuff, but we also do diving. So we bunch of cool guys, construction workers, know a lot of medicine, kind of dangerous.
Yeah, anytime you're dealing with heavy construction, it's always super dangerous. Yeah. It's not like swimming out of a submarine, you know, or anything like that.
Yep.
But it's a heavy lifting.
Yep. I'm a mechanic, and I started out as a regular CB. And I never met a CB diver until after my first duty station. It was just a chance luck that I ran into a CB divers. I didn't even know CBs had divers. Because when my first duty station, I was stationed in Gitmo, which is Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, man, I love Gitmo. I say it like every episode, don't I?
I don't
always talk about Gitmo.
I don't know. Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
It's like one of my favorite places.
Yeah, we should send a lot of people there. I'm skinny.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all the camps you get them into.
So there I was one day, I don't even know why, but I was at the airport, and I see this girl. She's wearing boots, UDTs, a cami top, and literally like a half a bag of sea bag dried on her shoulder. Just walking around the airport. And I was like, hey, excuse me, are you in the Navy? She's like, yeah, I'm in the Navy. I was like, well, what do you do for the Navy? She's like, well, I'm an EOD. So she does explosive ordnance and disposal. And I was like, oh, I guess at that time it was super lax uniform because, like, I didn't even know you could travel with UDTs. They call it the little brown shorts kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, so what do you do? He's like, oh, just travel the world. And I was like, you travel the world, get paid to work out. I'm sold. I was like, how do you do that? But so at that time, it was like early 90s. And I think the first CB female actually didn't, I think she didn't roll into like 94. So this is like predating. Yes, I am older than her, so don't judge me. But
I wouldn't be able to tell. I definitely look older. Johnny can testify to that.
Yeah, you look old.
So, yeah, so so time along, once I got out of the Gitmo regime over there, I went to NMCB-4, which was Naval Mobile Construction Battalion unit. And also at that time, they never did have a female in Bataan. So I think I was like number 4. In NMCB-4 kind of thing. So it was very interesting time because females were finally getting into the combat. They call it even though we're a construction worker, but we're combat ready coming in kind of thing.
Yeah, because you never know where they're going to send you. Yes. Could be in the middle of a war zone.
Yes.
And, you know, we usually, you know, we go in during wartime. We go in, you know, clear the area for the Marines to come in and, you know, and build them nice houses. And as they fight forward, you know, we're right behind them and, you know, take care of business. So, I put in for, it's a volunteer in the Seabees or any other Navy program at that time. It's a volunteer program. So in the Seabees, you have to learn your rate first. So you can't just be like, you know, like nowadays you could join the Navy as a Navy diver and go through technical school right out of boot camp and do the whole cool stuff. But in the Seabees, you have to go through the technical training because we were Seabee first. Mm-hmm. And we learn our trade because that's the bread and butter. So after, once I got to Fort Wainimi, California, which is down the street from here,
mm-hmm.
I got with the underwater construction team too. I had a great master diver there. He was an advocate for me. In the regular CBs at that time, they didn't really know the underwater construction team, so they weren't really like, why do you want to be those big guys in little brown shorts people kind of scenario, you know? So there were a bunch of haters, but
ainers gonna ain't.
That's right. And he advocated for, you know, it's like, hey, she could do it. And so there I was going to dive school.
So there I was
cold
there
naked was. And scared.
Yeah.
Going to dive school.
Yeah
you were scared, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That was unheard of at the time.
I'd be scared.
No, there wasn't. Literally, there was, I met this first CB divers in Yokosuka, Japan. And they actually helped me do, you know, like pull-ups. What's pull-ups? Pull-up muscles are different from push-up muscles, okay? I don't care if you're big buff guys. I've seen big buff guys can't do pull-ups. So, you know, I mean, I was goose eggs in the beginning, you know, zeros, but I worked it up and then I was, you know, good enough to go.
Nice.
It worked out.
That's pretty awesome. So did you have like a mentor that was helping you out a little bit?
Yes.
Along the way?
And he was a HM1 at the time. It was a corpsman guy. He's like, you know, it's like you have the heart of a lion. You could do it. It's like, okay. All right. So he helped me from swimming to running to, because like I only run to the bathroom. I hate running,
right?
But, you know, I do it. And he was definitely an inspiring person. However, what's the crazy part is, like, once I became a diver, I couldn't find him. I didn't know where he was at. So he never really got to see me working as a diver. But once I got out, so I retired, I just happened to run into him and like, I don't know, I think I was in like Greece or something like that. And I saw him waddling down the pier. He's like, oh, Sam, look, guess what? It's like, I made it through. He's like, all right. So he was super happy to see me. And he's super, super, super inspiring.
So how was that first day of school? Like, what was the reception? How did you feel? What was that whole experience, that first day?
The very first day, naturally, you know, back in the days, there was just no females there. So I was the only girl in the locker room. I was the only girl walking in the hallway. So it was, and, you know, nobody wanted to talk to you. Nobody wanted to look at you because you're like, ooh, girl, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, it wasn't. Only friend I had was a one CB like buddy guy that came with me at that time. But I just kept my mouth shut, tried to be incognito. But no matter how hard I try to be not noticed, you're going to be noticed. So I did a lot of push-ups. Just, you know, they just look at me like, all I see is like a finger down kind of. And that's like automatic push the floor. So it was interesting. I think I got away. First funny section is first, I think, like a month, because I was there a little early. Everybody thought I was a foreign exchange student because we do that a lot over there. And I'm, you know, kind of Heinz 57 look, you know, mixed up, you know. So they weren't really sure where I came from, who I was. All they knew was an, you know, a person, a new diver kind of thing. So I kept my mouth shut, so nobody really spoke to me. They seen me at the club because, you know, school was in Panama City. So I was, you know, getting the whole spring break thing, and a lot of instructors saw me, but they never really spoke to me until, I think it was like a second week. They finally like, do you know how to do cow bodybuilders? And I was like, and I didn't even say anything. I just like shook my head like, yeah. Like, but one day I was at a scuba locker holding the tanks, and he heard me. This one instructor, particularly, he heard me speaking to one of my friends. You know, I was like talking about how crappy it was to be standing out here in the sun holding the tanks. He's like, Korean, you speak English? I was like, yeah.
God damn it, Korean.
I was like, I'm American.
I'm American.
He was like, what? But after that, it was like game on, you know, like every chance he saw me, let me have it. Because like, you tricked us. I didn't trick you guys anything.
I just kept my mouth shut.
You made me look like a fool.
Rolled with it.
Yeah, but I was scared, you know. And it's really sad to be in a locker room by yourself.
Right. I can't, you know, I just can't imagine how that would feel. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's part of the reason why we love doing these shows, because it's like, there's going to be somebody that's in a similar position. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be another, you know, female diver that's in a similar position on a boat with a bunch of super alpha dudes, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, do you have to step up your game? Not really. You kind of got to be true to yourself, but also it's just, I mean, describe kind of your feelings.
Yeah,
about the whole situation.
I think when I was in dive school, I knew I was pretty. I'm not a dumb. I was pretty smart. So there's two types of divers, right? There's smart divers and there's strong divers. I was definitely the smart diver. But I knew that when I got through the PT, physical training, and went into the locker, and I sat down and I bawled my ass off. I just cried, you know, just like, it just, I don't know. I cried every day almost. And then I took a shower, washed the tear away, and I walked out that locker room like I owned that place, you know, because I couldn't let people know that I was feeling weak a little bit.
Yeah, you can't show weakness.
Yeah, because at that time in the beginning, I didn't have, you know, a lot of friends. But as time went on, you know, and you build your confidence, and then you realize, like, hey, I ain't got nothing to prove, but be strong and be smart and, you know, get the job done. So as time went on, it got better until we got this one girl. We had this one Army girl that came in, and I tried my darndest to not have her quit, but at the end, long story short, she kind of like dropped, you know, but I was like, I was kind of happy that I had another, you know, a comrade or a friend to chitter chatter with. But that's the only regret I had. I wish I had like better strength in myself to like kept her in. But that was like I knew if I made it through that one PT session that day, my day was over because the rest was academic. And I was like, that's no problem.
Now, do you stay in contact with all with any of those guys at from the school?
Most of the guys, I have one guy that's still in. He's a master diver now, but I think most of the guys had kind of feathered away because, you know, I've been in. I retired after 24 years. Yeah. So, you know, some of the fleet guys were seasoned guys that's been in for a long time. And they kind of feathered away. But I have one guy that I think he's still in down the NDU or was. So we started out with like 30 something people. We graduated with 12.
Yeah.
So it's very slim. That's left over.
You know, we've heard that before where you start with like another Navy diver had told us that water, you know, we've heard this before, water is a great equalizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can take the biggest, buffest dude, but throw him in a pool.
Yeah.
And if he's not comfortable, he's screaming bloody murder. Save me, save me, save me. And then here comes Lisa Correa going to save him. Right.
That's right.
But so let's go. Just going back to dive school real quick. Did you have anybody that was kind of, or did you have people that were like actively hoping that you failed, or was it just one of those things where they just ignored you and just, whatever, she's going to quit, cares about her?
Every day I had something new. I had one instructor. It was like after like we got our blue and gold kind of thing. So we're on pier side, and every day we were there, he brought a hair clipper, and all I hear is, burr. I was like, what the heck is that noise? And it's like, it's a hair clipper. And, I have long hair at that time. And they're like, hey, Lisa, come over here. I was like, let us shave your head. And you don't even have to come back till the graduation. We'll give you your certificate.
I was like,
yeah, no shit. It's like, no. It's like, I got a lot of studying I got to do. Like, no. Let us cut your hair and just buzz it all off. And you don't have to come back to school. It's like, so I had one of those. I've had a couple times where I get called into the instructor's office. I didn't do nothing wrong, you know, just be me. But they have a drop-on request form already pre-filled out.
Jeez.
And they kind of give it to you. You know, they slid it over to me. They probably don't even remember, but I remember like crystal clear. And just sign here and you'll be done. And it's like, well, did you see my obituary today? He's like, no. It's like, well, then I ain't signing it. If that's all you have today, then I would like to get released, sir. Awesome. So I just like, no, not today, Satan.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I had a bunch of hate, you know, little things like that. But it wasn't like dive school wasn't really that bad. I had a lot of instructors, you know, just peers and stuff like that helped me out. At that time, the CB diving community was we weren't separate from the fleet diving. So we went to school with the fleet divers. So I had a lot of supporters, you know, that over, like, kind of surpassed the haters kind of thing. So they kept me, you know, motivated. They kept me, you know, strong, per se. But I had a bunch of haters after the fact. They're like, really bad ones, but I could go on with that one.
Yeah, it's best not to dwell on the negative
past,
you know. And, so we're glad you made it through.
We're cheers. At a dive school now. Cheers.
Cheers.
We're at a dive school.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you stationed first, and what was your first job? If you can talk about it. I don't know if
I can. Naturally, we're kind of closed loop command or team. So my first duty station was underwater construction team 2, which was in Port Hueneme on the West Coast. It was like you know, if you're top of the class, you kind of get to pick wherever you want to go to, but you only had two choices, team one and team two. So I picked California because that's where my family was at the time. Team two has been phenomenal. Like, I never had like the CB haters. Like, I never had anybody like try to, you know, like, you know, mess up your career or anything like that. Everybody, like all the CBs, divers that I've worked with has been phenomenal. They're great mentors. They always, you know, they're smart and, you know, they're kind of salty. We're a bunch of dirt sailors, you know, we fly coach, and but we get there kind of guys, you know, pretty crusty. But I had a great time at the teams, and it's only like unfortunate thing is, you know, like I said, it's like closed loops. I didn't really get to go back down to Panama City to, you know, be instructors or stuff like that. But I've definitely held almost every spot that you could do training, done like maintenance department and things like that. So got to do a lot of things.
That's cool.
The teams.
How long were you with the CBs?
The whole time. I was a regular mechanic for about 2-3 years, and I've been diving ever since. At the teams, my first first place I went to, like a big deployment, so to speak, it was to dive in the Arctic, to nice. Do ice diving, and not everybody used to. It was freaking amazing. We were the only unit at the time that can sustain life, you know, like over 30 days, make our own water, think of it like a Roku unit, build a ice camp, dive under the ice and do some, you know, missions that was written for us to take care of for the big Navy. And over there, I got to, I'm a mechanic, so I got to work on skidoos and jet skis and, you know, towing tents around and, did a lot of cool diving. It's like, it was so crystal, water was so crystal clear that I was on the bottom. And I remember looking at the gauge, it was like, literally it said 100. I was like, 100 feet exactly, it's a seafloor. And I could look up, I could see the two incandescent light that's through the hole. And I could see the guy that's tending me. I could see him, you know, holding my umbrella pole, and I'm looking up at the tent camp, and it was like crystal clear. It was so clear that you couldn't even see how far you're seeing.
Wow.
That was amazing.
That's crazy. Whoa. That was scary.
I know.
Even the machine liked my story.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick little break, and we're going to refill our brewskis here, yes, and we'll be right back on the Bob Goeller's Dive Shack. Love an animated show. I don't know what that was. It was a ghost.
See what God just did to us, man.
Yeah, like,
It was like a moment there, looking up
yeah,
the Arctic up. Water, the two lights,
right?
Two angels.
I mean, it was
waving
so
at
it. It was so beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I think you guys
I can't
see
imagine it.
Like, I made you guys look up.
Yeah, no, like it was. I've been in, like, you know, springs, freshwater springs, and that's beautiful. But what I've heard that, like, Arctic water, it's like.
Yeah, it was, like, really, really cold.
Like the shit.
I was, like, so mad because I'm, like, mechanic. So when the guys are diving, I keep the heater going, the tent, you know, nice and toasty. Then, like, when I went to go diving, I came up. The heater was broken. My socks were frozen solid. I was so pissed. I was like, what's going on over here? Why is my sock standing up right now? Because, like, they're like, oh, yeah, I don't know what happened, but the heater broke. They're like, we're, like, minus 20 right now. And it was literally my socks standing straight up because it was, like, frozen solid in the tent.
That's awesome.
So,
straight up.
Straight up. It's like a boner.
Yeah.
Those happen, I think,
this show turned south very, very quick. Very, very quick.
I'm gonna edit this out.
That's how it happened. No, that's just what
it's
it is.
It's gonna be in there now.
It is.
That's okay. I'm not scared.
What was
I don't even know what we're talking about.
What was the biggest job you had? Like the one that you remember the most? Besides the Arctic, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So, the biggest job that we had, that I've had, Well, it all depends, but I think the longest one we did was we were down at the San Diego working on the MSF range, which is a magnetic silencing facility. So we had to change out all those sensors in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really intricate and cold and long dive. It's kind of funny because Navy dive is very safe. We have like loads of people on the side and
standby ready at all times with a hat
ready to go. We were taking the sensors out and putting the new one in, but along the side there was like a commercial diving guys. I think they were jetting the tubes in or something like that. But we look over and the guy, you know, like the red diver, primary diver, he's like chucking a bunch of hose in the water because we were only like maybe less than 30 feet. But
jeez.
He was like chucking
hose
in the water.
100 foot of hose, 30 feet to help.
He's like, he hats himself up and he's like, boom, it goes in. We're all in awe, like, wow, what's going on over there? And then the standby diver, he like unhats himself and he walks in around the deck with a hard hat, with the neck down. We're like, wow, that's kind of crazy, but that's cool.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Throws 100 foot out, jumps in the middle, hitches the whole thing together.
Yeah, he was like,
standby's chilling.
Yeah, he's just chilling over there, and he's like,
he's trying to untangle knots.
Hungover.
Yeah, one guy just working, and we got like two guys working and stuff like that. So that, and then another big one we did, which was a very long and cumbersome job, was we were up at Everett, Washington. So it was, the pier is like made out of timber.
Yeah.
So in the morning, and of course, naturally, we never go there when it's hot.
No,
so,
why would you?
Right. I mean, it won't make sense. So we were there. The pier will freeze every morning. So we were like slipping and sliding, trying to get to our job site. And it's about like a 20 feet, like tidal change kind of. So in the morning, you got to, go down like on a JP slider all the way down. And by the time, end of the day, it's like pier level kind of thing. But we were doing pile wrapping. So we had to get the ho-de-ho and clean all the barnacles off. And then we did get a wrap. It looks like a tire and wrapping, and using pneumatic hammer, just all day long. We're diving. Like, I remember one morning, it's kind of dumb. At that time, I was trying to like get all yoked up and get cut, right?
Get ripped.
So me and my friend, all the dive buddies, like, hey, let's go on a diet. It's like, all right. So first thing, 1,200 calorie diet, just like kind of dumb. But we're like, yeah, we're going to be so yoked by the time we ended the job, and blah, blah, blah. So we went down that day, that morning, and that particular dive was, I was like in there for like almost 6 hours. So it was a daylight, and then by the time I came up, the street lights were on. I was in there so long that they kind of forgot that I was in there because we're kind of doing like a hot swap. Ollie was in there too. And as long as I was working, I was fine, Mm-hmm. And the other guys, they were using the monkey heater kind of thing. So they had a hose. So it's like, once you get on the titties.
Yeah.
You're ruined.
I love being on the titties.
Yeah, that's this guy.
Give me the hot water.
Yeah. So once you get the hot water, you're addicted. It's like crack. You're addicted to it.
Totally
so
is. Give me that pipe, baby.
Right. So the guys couldn't last. They just couldn't last. I refused. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. So I just kept working. So they literally forgot that I was in there. And like for that particular dive, it was surface apply diving. And I just happened to take a watch down there. And I was like, and plus I was getting really, really hungry. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
I was like, holy crap. It's like already 5.5 hours. Like, hey, what's my bottom time? They're like, wait one.
Who is this?
Yeah, I was like, what? You're still down there? And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, hey, come up a little bit. It's okay, because I was like in the middle of water column cleaning.
Yeah.
It's okay. Red diver, first stop, 10 feet. I was like, what? What do you mean? It's like, yeah, we owe you some time now. I was like, damn it. Now I'm cold, freezing. Yeah. And I know.
At least it was somewhat shallow, so it wasn't like super dangerous.
It wasn't that bad, but I mean, it was like kind of.
You're still super Z'd out.
Yeah, I was like super hungry. And then like, at the end of the day, I finally came up and now my helmet is like bouncing off the top of the pier. Now I'm getting pissed. I was like, boom, boom, boom. And I finally get out of the water, and then I look at my friend. It's like, dude, I'm like starving right now. So like, yeah, let's go. So we were like ran to the galley. We ate like there was no tomorrow. We ate everything that was there, all the leftovers and everything. So our diet kind of went to hell that day, but things like that happen. I'm not too chatty catty underwater, kind of going there and work.
Me too. I would prefer you not talk to me.
Right.
Unless I'm dying. Right. And I don't know it.
And that's what I was telling somebody. I was like, yeah, I was like, I love the hats, but when you start adding helmets with cameras and lights and all this other Gucci gear, then next thing you know, it's like, hey, can you look up? Can you move to the right? Can you look down? Oh, what are you doing? What's going on? Just show us what you're doing. So I don't mind doing scuba a lot of time because, you know, they give you a no deeper than, no longer than, and you just get down there and get to work, and they just, yeah. Topside just praying that you do what they ask you to do.
I don't see the need for the cameras. Like, we run with camera dives every single dive. Camera, every single dive. It's like,
I completely agree with you.
Why do we need that? We don't even record.
Yeah, we don't even record it.
It's like, for the engine, for the desk. I call it the desktop.
Like, you're interrupting
doggies.
My nap.
Yeah.
I'm trying to chase this lobster. And then we got topside. They're like, hey,
what are you doing?
Get back to work. Yeah, but chase this lobster.
Leave that turtle alone.
Get that. Exactly. Yeah. And sticking your fingers where it doesn't belong.
I guess it's so topside can see if we're in trouble or not.
But, like, you know, like, for like guys or, like, people like us that don't use camera a lot, we do appreciate some of the video footage that the commercial divers do provide. And, you know, not only is it, you know, like, wow, so cool, but it's a knowledge that we don't get to see. So we do appreciate it. So sometimes you're going to have to suck it up with a camera action.
Yeah. I like it when you don't see my work because it's amazing.
Because it's amazing.
100% of the time, it's amazing.
That's on my camera.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
So you were with the CBs for a long time. You retired a CB, huh?
Yep.
It was like career, yeah.
2016.
Yeah,
2016. So now I work as a civilian. I work for as a diver, as a civilian. And I basically kind of do the same thing, get to dive, not as much. I do a lot of work with a lot of commercial divers and do a consulting kind of thing, or, give a SME or subject matter expert kind of thing situation. But I still get to dive, so I'm very happy, but with a lot less baby mama dramas. Like when I was like, you know, in charge of guys, you know, it's like, if you got 15 guys and 15 guys have 5 problems and that 5 problem becomes all yours. And next thing you know, you got like 30 problems. So that part I don't miss, but
I've got 99 problems though, but a dive padding at once, 17 B's awesome.
I like it.
Here we go again.
Sorry.
All right.
That was perfect. That was perfect.
It's freaking awesome. It's just sitting right here in front of us.
Yeah.
Beautiful hat.
You totally stole it. That's one of my favorites. One of my first ones, I think. This hat.
It's going to be a beer bong now.
Yes, it's actually being modified. For those that that don't know, we are working on a prototype, a 17B beer bong. So very top secret. It will be revealed in one of our future episodes. So be on the lookout for it. And if you guys have a chance, check out the Bottom Dwellers Beer Club, which is a second show that we're doing. And we have Lisa Correa's Hido with you. Ollie is the owner of the bar beside Bruin.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about him.
Ollie,
now that he's gone.
Ollie from the South Kaki Lucky. Yeah, so I know him for a very, very long time. And you can't put him in anything because he's Ollie. He's just one of a kind, you know. I mean, I'm sure if you listen to his story, everybody, you know, gets kind of engrossed in his story. You know, every day he's like, hey Ollie, what's up? Duck's ass when it's eaten, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So I mean,
he's got a lot of proverbs going
on. Yeah,
he
does. It's like
Ollieisms.
You know.
Yeah, it's Ollieisms.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, Ollieism. Yes, exactly. You know, it's like, I'm so hungry.
This is such a great town, man. Like Fort Hueneme, I worked on the Port Hueneme base.
Oh, really?
Yeah, super awesome place. I mean, it was so cool seeing all the CBs running around, and they had the most delicious lobster. I can say that now because, actually, can I say that now, or can they come arrest me afterwards?
I don't.
I'll tell you what, though.
Statue of Limitation.
I was pooping bricks because we were there on the base, and we were seeing these lobsters all scurrying around. So we replaced the draw. So you guys have like a drawbridge over there. It's like a weird long drawbridge. Yeah. We replaced that.
Oh, okay.
So I was working for. That's a company I was telling you about that they do the coolest jobs, but it's like not very often. It's like the best part-time job I've ever had.
Okay.
You know, and so we were there at Port Hueneme replacing that drawbridge span. It's all dive work. It was freaking amazing. So we're seeing these lobsters running around. We had another dude with us. I'm not going to say his name unless you put a couple beers in me and it's off mic. So we're seeing these lobsters and he gets super excited. So then he's like, I'm going to make a couple traps. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, we're thinking making these little lobster traps because we're on a freaking base. You know, we're going to get arrested. There's MPs always rolling around. You know? So he comes, he brings this big old F-350 in. He's got a tarp on it with a freaking super high. We're talking like he brings in these giant freaking 4x whatever the hell traps.
Oh my God.
4 giant lobster traps on base. And it's like he wants us to throw them in there. And being the divers that we were,
we just did it.
We said no.
Yeah.
No.
It's against the law.
How dare you ask me that?
I know. So
I'll just use my hand.
When we were checking the traps.
Of course.
Wait.
We got so many lobsters. We cleaned that place out.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
That pier is kind of constructed perfectly because, you know, there's like rocks.
Everybody was eating well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm going to give you a wink and I'll tell you that everybody was eating well.
Mm. Looks like you're having a stroke.
Well. Yeah. It's like everybody was in on it from the top to the bottom. See, that's how you get away with stuff. Is you got to make sure that you get the CO.
Right, obviously.
You know,
yeah.
Get the CO in on it all the way down to the ground.
As long as you have a permit, and that's what we do, you know.
So oh, yeah.
You might do a nighttime navigational.
Delicious.
You know, training, but, you know.
If you guys are allowed to lobster in Port Hueneme, if you're listening. They're very delicious, but I think we did kill a whole generation of them. Like, I can't be prosecuted, right? Like,
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, it can't because there's no evidence. It's been eaten.
Yeah.
All right, perfect.
No evidence.
Port Hueneme is freaking awesome. Great town. That's the point that I was trying to make.
It's amazing that there's a lot of people on the base that do not know that there's actually a waterfront that's attached to the base.
Yeah,
and they're always amazed at where do you guys work? Where do you guys go diving at? It's like at the pier. They're like, what pier? It's like Ventura Pier. It's like no, there's like a whole like Navy ship comes through Hueneme and all the little Chiquita bananas and all the cars.
Yeah.
Where do you think they get them from? Our bays. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know, but my cousin, she might be there right now.
Yeah,
she's stationed there, or she was.
You have to let me know. I have to go find it.
Yeah.
There's a cool little bar right, like, as you're leaving Port Hueneme. They call it, like, it's a squid bar, but it's like.
Yeah, it changed names now. It's not a bar anymore.
Oh, no way.
It's a green, you know, it's a green mile now.
What?
Yep. It used to be, I forgot the name of it, though, but we frequent that bar a lot.
Yeah, like everybody went there. Like we weren't allowed to go there because, you know, it's dirty regular divers.
Right.
Ain't no CB diver.
Yes. So, yep. Back in the days.
Yeah.
But, we do, like, you know, a lot of the difference between the CB divers and the fleet divers, you know, fleet works on ships and ship's husbandry kind of thing, you know. We do boat ramps. We do waterfront facility constructions. We make pier. We build pier. We blow up pier kind of thing.
Nice.
So it's been like a very interesting job that we have because not only do we do just, you know, like work kind of thing, we also work with a place called NAFVAC, Naval Facility Engineering Worker Center. and we do RT&D. So, like, you know, somebody will say, hey, like, for example, we did a Puerto Rico, a while back, gave back the island of Villegas. And over there, we were doing a lot of area bombings and whatnot. So there's a lot of UX, so unexploded ordnance.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So we needed to do a reclamation, you know, make it right and get rid of everything that may still be down there. So that one of the engineers were tasked to figure out how to make a bubble curtain. So a lot of people don't know about the bubble curtain. It's, you know, it's basically a ring of a bubble to dissipate the shock wave to preserve the turtle habitats or what have you, so we don't like blast all the fishes, right?
Or don't make them deaf,
right? You know, or go fishing afterwards, because you know we've done that a lot. Boom, and then the birds come, and then we try to beat the birds.
And that's the way to make some ceviche.
Oh, yes. There you go.
And sometimes you get the ceviche soup. You don't know what you're going to get when you cut open a fish. But, we were trying to figure out, is it round shape is better? Is it triangle shape is better? So we go to like Crane, Indiana, and we went and did some research over there. The sound wave, shock wave, you know, studies and stuff like that. So we do a lot of scientific work also. We don't just go and pee for plenty and plan for that and blow things up. So we do a lot of precision in the sea, but like in the CBs, we do a lot of precision demolition. You know,
right.
So all the bridges, a lot of the bridges, they will call us and you know, hey, we had this one pile that we need to go. They will call the CBs. They won't call the fleet guys, but they just pack on the C4 and then boom and blow everything to smithereens.
So, meanwhile, you're there with the bro code doing the fine cuts and the chainsaw and the timber.
Yeah, we had a lot of bro code days and stuff like that, but chainsaw days. But lately, we've been doing a lot of precision demo because it's faster, it's economical, and a little bit cleaner, I guess, for this week. But,
nice.
Awesome. So what's on the horizon here for you? What's
for me?
What's next?
What's next? So I'm not really sure right now. I work with the center here at the Naval Facility Engineering Center. So I work with a bunch of technicians. I've been like last 6-7 years, I've been kind of poking holes, so to speak. So if you guys know, like horizontal directional drilling to bring in fiber optic cables to a lot of the island nations that they haven't had internet, and upgrading system for different places. So that's been my bread and butter right now, is just being one of the few subject matter experts to go down to different places and go lay some cables.
Nice.
That's awesome. So, forgot to talk about the, well, we didn't forget to talk about it, but so officially, we're going to go back to your, you know, dive school days. So, when you were going through dive school, it was what? You were the fourth female CB diver, you said?
I'm the second female diver. And then if they want to color it up a little bit, I'm the first African-American CB diver, so female-wise.
Right.
And because there are some predecessors like before me. And that's who I am right now.
Nice.
Somewhere in the history book.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But, you know, like, I don't really look at, I mean, acknowledge and absorb and I accept the accolades, but I just don't see myself as anybody better than, you know, other guy that's behind me or beside me, you know. And I mean, there's guys that can't do what we do, there's chicks that can't do what I do, so it's kind of I'm just appreciate all that stuff. And then, you know, I think I underappreciate or acknowledge the significance I've left, because the days that I forget the significance that I have left, other people around me reminds me that, you know, I've done something, and that's very strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really hits my heart.
Now, at the time, did you know that you were blazing trails or you were just like doing your thing?
I was just doing my thing. It's like, you know, there was people that told me, you can't do it. Why are you doing it? I mean, I really had haters. Like, I remember when I first made, there was like an article. It was really innocent because the girl that wrote the article, she wanted to be a chief editor at the Port Hueneme base. And she's like, hey, your story is really interesting. I want to write a story. I was like, yeah, no big deal. I didn't think nothing of it. She came to the house, you know, interviewed and took some pictures and bam, it just, as nowadays they call it viral. And it went cray cray and it went, I remember this one time they had, next thing you know, it was a local paper that went into the All Hand magazine that was really, you know, like a big Navy publication. I didn't think nothing of it until one day, I guess they were doing some air show at Miramar or somewhere in San Diego. Somebody blew up and made a big ass billboard on one of the highways with my picture on it.
Oh man, and did you know about that?
No, I didn't know until somebody
just drove by.
No, like, I didn't even, because you know, I wish it somebody had told me because I would have drove down there and took a picture of it. You know, it's not like it was a Calvin Klein, you know, in Hollywood streets or something like that, but it was somewhere on the highway. But what happened was one time I went down to San Diego for some training and I got invited to the first deep sea party. It's like, nice. Hail to the yes. I was like, oh my God, we made it. It's like, wow, we, you know, good to be CBs. You know, we're loved where we hated, you know? So, but they invited us. I was like, all right, let's go. We went and like, I just had bought, like, it was like a deep sea party. The guy I was hosting was he brewed his beer kind of thing, and he had this pint glass made with a Bark 5, and it was super, super cool. And I was like, $5. It was black and tan party. I was like, nailed it. And I just bought it, and then I get there, and this guy, his mass diver, need to be unsaid. But he got in my, this dude was like 6 foot something. He was big and I'm like 5 foot 6. So he was all up in my face. He's like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe your face got, you're on a billboard. You know, my guy's been diving longer than you have. And there, he kept saying faceplate, but you know, that's another diving community publication that's Navy wide. But I wasn't on faceplate. I was on All Hands. Like, everybody reads All Hand magazine in the pooper. Okay. So it wasn't a big deal, but he made it a big deal. And he just like, just all up in my face. Then I was like, I was looking at my glass. I was like, I could bash this in his head right now and just walk away. And that would make me feel better.
Damn.
Right.
Damn.
But you know, selfish deep sea dirty diver in me. I was like, I just paid $5 for this good black and tan. It's like, why am I going to waste it on this guy? But you know, I did contemplate it. And then just when I was going to, you know, waste my $5, one of my CB buddies, like, he grabbed my hand. So let's get out of here. We left. Right. And he's like, blah, 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 yelling. And, you know, and he was, you know, have a few beers, so to speak. I just barely had my first beer, so I wasn't, but I was kind of, and I was kind of disappointed, you know. It's like, I thought I'm finally going to be in a mesh with the fleet, you know, all the cool guys, blah, 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 want to do the sea story, get all the info, blah, 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 but it did not work out years down the line. So this is when I was a baby diver. Years down the line, I go to dive school, going back to dive school. I was a first class diver. Oh, we're going to be trained as a first class diver kind of thing. So long story short, at the end, I see my CO and my master chief, like from California, in my classroom. I was like, what the heck are you guys doing here? It's like, yeah, we came to see you. It's like, oh my God, I'm in trouble. And it was automatic. You know, it's like, why is my CO here? What did I do? And
who did I bash over the head with a glass?
I was like, maybe he knew about it, found out. But my master chief, he flips his little knife out, like click. It's like, what is he gonna do? Is it stabbing? And he just shh, shh, shh. He got to my collar. That's when we were wearing our insignia on our collars. took the knife out. He literally ripped all my insignia off. He goes, congratulations. We were going to promote you. I was like, oh, wow. I was super stoked, you know. However, it was even better because they gave me 10 months because they were kind of at that time, they were super delayed with promotions and everything. So 10 months of back pay. That wasn't like $10. That was like thousands of dollars. So, of course, like a good deep sea diver, there was another bar across the dive school called it Down the Hatch. So I had a brilliant idea. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to have a party, a promotion party, and I am going to invite the whole dive school. Everybody came to that party. Why wouldn't they, right? And then, back then when it was like the 50-foot subway was big things, you know, I'm like, you know, about a couple of kegs. Panama City is like a redneck Riviera, so you could go to the Walmart and buy like keg of beers. But, you know, I did the right thing. I bought it from the bar.
But, 100 pack of PBR, right?
No, I went Coors Light because I don't like Coors Light, but the guys like Coors Light. Okay. My budget beer is Bud Light.
Bud Light.
Yeah. So, but it was kind of cool, you know. And then one of the bartender girls, she's like, "Oh, I got a part time job." It's like, "Well, we need you. Where are you going?" It's like, "I got to go down the street." So, where are you going? She's like, "I got a part time job." It's like, that's not answering my question. Where are you going? She's like, "I got to go down to the curve." Ooh. I was like,
"That's like, the library, right?"
Yeah, it's a library, right? So I was like, well, how long is it going to take you? It's like, well, you know, a couple dances. I was like, hold on for a second. So I made a big announcement. I was like, all right, half the bar went with her. We drove her there, made her do her little dance, one dance, gave her enough money to make her little day, you know, her part-time job. And it's like, I need you back at the bar because, like, I got, like thousands of people over there. She's like, okay. So it was pretty funny, you know, like, support the stripper kind of thing. Yeah. She was really nice.
You got to support the industry.
She was really nice. We gave her a ride and everything. She came back. But the moral of the story is from the hater guy. So the next day, I went to, you know, Sunday or whatever. I went to make sure that the bartender and the waitress, whoever that was there, was paid correctly. You know, they had their tips. You know, make sure everything was still good. So I went to the bar, and I look up at the bar, and there was that one guy that one time in San Diego that was all up in my face, hating on me. He didn't even, like, I never met him until that time in that San Diego. So, but he didn't see me because they were back. Was towards me. So I told the girl, I was like, hey, have they paid their bills? Is the tap still open? Goes, yeah. He's like, okay. So you know what? So I'm going to pay their tab right now and I'm going to buy another round. She's like, are you sure? Do you know these guys? Like, they don't know me, but they'll know me. So I paid their bills. I silently walked out, went back to school. Oh, back home. The next day, it was Monday. I get called out by that same guy. He's like, and you know what? That was the first time that he, like, talk to me like I was a person, and he apologized. Hey, that was pretty cool what you do. You know, sorry what happened a long time ago, blah, blah. He probably don't even remember, but I remember crystal clear. But you know what? That was small victory for me. And that's what I do, you know? It's like I embrace the haters. You know?
That's a really cool story.
Yeah, it makes me stronger.
Freaking amazing story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, it was kind of, you know, I remember that time that, you know, it's like, it just, when I was like, wow, this is one chance to do things right, and I'm going to do it right because that's what I need to do. So I was like, eat your heart out.
Yeah. You know, and I'm telling you, that's the diver's mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going in there like, you know, oh, I'm trying to blaze trails or I'm trying to do this or that for other reasons, you're probably not going to make it.
Yeah. Karma will always get you.
You know, but if you're doing it for yourself and for the reasons, you know, your personal reasons, as far as like, you know, because you want to do it for the love of the ocean, love of the water, love of working with your hands, the love of being in the adventure, you know, doing all that stuff, you're probably going to make it.
Yes.
You know, and you had the right attitude going into it. Probably wasn't until after where you realize the gravity of the situation. I mean, history books now. But at the time, it's like, you're just trying to be a diver.
I was trying to be cool.
Just trying to be cool, wearing a car.
You know, be the little girl in little brown shorts.
They should sell some of those shorts here at Poseidon Brewing Company.
Yeah,
they should sell some Poseidon
UAV. Only used to rock that like it was cool. So
right.
It is.
I would wear it right now. Bring it back. Bring it back. Yeah. We'll wear some. Put our little logo on it too.
Okay, yeah. So being a diver for 23 years, it's time for the old shits.
It's time for...
Oh shit. I almost died. Or I should be dead.
I got one.
Or I could have lost a finger.
No, I like dead.
No.
Damn.
I thought I was going to die for sure.
You see? So, you can lose a finger. That's fine.
Yeah, we have a lot of divers with like fingers like this.
Dude's giving the shaka the whole time because they lost the three fingers.
Yeah. We had a guy that lost a ring finger because he was at the edge of the boat and like buoy was there and the boat went forward and boom, it buzzed his finger kind of thing. But he's still alive.
Just finger.
So my should have been this story is we were doing some divers training down at it was like a divers training / work because you know we don't waste time kind of thing in the Seabees because we don't have that much opportunity to get a lot of things done because we don't have big boats and whatever. So anyway, so we found a project that we were doing. We were looking for something in the water and locate it, find it. It was deep water. Doing a Sergio 2 kind of dive.
Nice.
And the dive before me, because you know in the fleet they have stages, so they get up and over on a stage. Easy day. In the Seabees, you're hauling people up and climbing up, you know, 10-foot of side of the boat and everything, and up and over kind of thing on a ladder kind of thing. So one of the master divers said, hey, make sure you guys keep tight 10 on the divers because we don't want it to fall off the ladder. So that was like the standing order that we were given. No big deal. Didn't think nothing big about it until I went diving. So we were down like 170 doing our thing. We're coming up and then we were at the first up at 30 feet. And one of the other thing that they wanted us to do was take our fins off so we could hurry up and climb the ladder, get up and over, get in the chamber down, you know, down to depth. I have my ankle weights and everything, but because the guys were tending me so tight, as soon as I took my fins off, I got flipped upside down. Jeez. Right?
Yeah.
And of course, nothing in the Navy fits. Because all the guys are big buff guys, guys. So neck dams cut. So, you know, it never really fits right unless you're upright and, you know, then you're fine. But I got flipped upside down. I'm telling the topside, I'm trying to tell the topside, hey, give me some slack. They're like, no, you're at your stop. You're not getting any more slack. I was like, no, I need some slack. Because what I needed was I needed slack to upright myself.
Right.
But because I was literally like a lollipop on the stick and I just couldn't get up and around, and we were supposed to be faceboard to faceboard, but I would think that the guy saw my feet in his face that he would like look down and like, what the heck is she doing?
Yeah, flip you around, help you
right,
out.
Right, help me out, help a sister out, you know? But like, he was like, you know, doing his thing. And as I'm upside down, I could just feel the water just pouring into my neck down. It's like next thing, I could feel my hat and I'm like, and my oral nasal, you know, they do come in sizes. If guys don't know, baby divers don't know, they do come in sizes and invest in your size because I have size extra large or something like that. Because next thing I know, my oral nasal is filling up. Because the idea is, you know, oral nasal stays. And then even if your helmet floods, you're able to breathe. That was not my case. Okay.
Let's pause real quick. You can breathe in a hat that's completely filled with water.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Because when I opened my eyes, it was filled with water. Filled with water. And then my oral nasal was filled. I'm like, oh, crap. I have good breath hold. Now I'm trying to blast open my steady flow. That thing was like WTFO, like why the fuck open? Like I could not get any more air in there.
Because you're upside down.
All right. And then the water. So now I'm fishbowling. I'm grabbing my hat. I'm fishbowl. Now my lips are out of the oronazo, finding any air gap right. that I can just to breathe. Wow. Topside could hear me gurgling. You know, they're like, something's not right with her. And I was like, but I had to do my stuff. You know, so they're like, I don't know what. It just felt like an eternity, but I know it was only like probably minute or two, but I was like struggling. And I knew like when I opened my eyes and I had the helmet full of water that I'm going to drown. You know, they have the term near drowning for a reason. So basically, long story short, I somehow survived that stop. I don't even know how I did it. They were yanked. They pulled me up. I was literally upside down still and struggling to get air all the way to the ladder. And then they realized like, oh shit, she's upside down. They gave me some slack, I upright myself. I don't even know how I was really like out of it. Got up on the ladder. They're undressing me for surgery. Things are flying. I'm mad because like, I'm just watching my knife, my titanium knife being washed away off the side of the boat because what had happened was as soon as they took the helmet off, it was like upside down bucket syndrome. It's like just gallons of water that, you know, it felt like a gallon. It probably wasn't, but it was like water just came. I'm literally watching the helmet, this water line just going behind, you know, in front of my face, like dumped it. I was kind of way out of it. I was pissed. You know, because like all they needed to do was give me some slack.
Yeah.
Like I needed like maybe 2 feet, but they just wouldn't do it because, you know, standing order. Got in the chamber. Didn't even clear all the way to the bottom because I was so like jacked up. But like I survived, you know, it's like at the end. But the sad part, or not sad, but at the time, of course, I was dating somebody and he was on station. He was a civilian, but he was like, you know, this kind of was his project kind of thing. All he could do was like hear me drowning. Can you imagine hearing on the comm box? Right?
Screaming?
I wasn't
running. Not even screaming.
I couldn't even scream because I had so much water. Yeah. So he was literally hearing me drown. So I was like, I was okay after, you know, I got the helmet off and, you know, got in the chamber, did my time and came out.
After a few MFs.
Yeah. And then it came up, you know, up and over. And I was like walking to my room to change, or like not a room, but like, you know, like the ship's whatever, like stateroom, whatever. And he came in and like, and then I saw his face. That's when I realized like I could just see the fear, not fear, like. He he's looking at like a ghost.
Yeah.
Looking at me like he's just looking at a ghost kind of thing. And I was like, but I didn't die. He's like, I know. But I didn't die. He's like, I know.
And this should be a sticker.
Right?
But I didn't die.
but I didn't know what to say because like I was more like, and then, you know, of course I bawled after seeing his face, like, because he looked really scared than I was, even though what's weird is like I wasn't scared, but I was more mad that I was drowning. You know, it's like, really, I'm drowning in my hat, seriously, right
upside
now?
upside down. I couldn't do anything fuller. Like, yeah. It exploded.
Yeah, I was like, goodness, I'm drowning.
Through something, I'm drowning.
Sucked through a pipe.
Yeah, all that EPs, it works and it's helpful, but one thing I could say is like, and this goes not just for like military or but any divers, make sure your stuff fits. Pay the extra money, pay the extra money. Make sure everything fits to your liking, especially the commercial guys. They could die. I've seen like all kinds of hats and like hokey stuff and cool high speed stuff. But, you know, only have one life.
Yeah,
you know,
there's some jerry-rigged stuff going on.
Yeah, spend the extra money, do the maintenance, pay the money, because you only have one life. And that was like my like real, oh shit, I'm really going to drown and die kind of situation. Man. It's crazy.
That's a good one.
That's the reason why we do this. That's the reason why we ask. Yeah. You know, it sounds like it's all in fun, but somebody listening out there is going to have a similar situation, or they're going to be, you know, it's going to help somebody.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
And you have to invest in yourself. Invest in the gear. I know the hats. I know the commercial guys. And you have to buy your own hats. And you know some business they provide it for you, but pay the extra money to get your own neck down because you know not all bodies are built the same. You know. And I usually get the leftovers, so people already, you know, we got big guys with big necks, so they like, you know, don't want to get choked, so they cut it. And when they cut it, that's 1 inch off my life kind of situation. So after that incident, thank God, my command's like, oh, yeah, you're going to get your own neck down. And I have my own this, everything but minus the hat. You know, so it really helped out a lot to, you know, they accommodated me because, you know, they don't want people to die either. So safety's first and it's a paramount in the Navy. So they really took care of me, made sure I had my own, you know, size little boots and that like size 13, you know, Mark V boots that we all dive together and share the boots and stuff like that. So even boots could, you know, really be an ass kicker too if it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And especially for us when you got to climb up the ladder and stuff like that.
Tripping all over stuff.
Mm.
Man, such a great episode.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I feel like we can go for another hour. Do we want to go for another hour?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. All right. I got some cool stuff coming up. I'm working with another brother from another mother.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to get another beer.
Yes.
And then we'll be right back in the Bottom Brothers Diaphragm.
This is Bobby DeLeese of the New Orleans-based maritime law firm DeLeese & Hall. For over 40 years, DeLeese & Hall has represented professional divers working offshore, in inland waters, or anywhere across the globe. This is what I know. All divers and their families should develop a relationship with an experienced diving attorney before an emergency occurs, so that if that emergency does occur, the diver's attorney is there to assist them in their time of need. Consider me and my partners, Alton Hall and Jeanette DeLeese, as your bailout bottle. Pray that you will never need to engage us, but should an emergency occur, we're standing by to assist you and your family. Here's something else I know. Diving contractors, dive gear manufacturers, third parties, and their insurance companies have the money to have their attorneys on call. Why shouldn't the diver and his loved ones also have an attorney in their gear bag before they leave home? Want to learn how DeLeese & Hall will be there should you need us? Give us a call at 1-800-DIVER-55 or call me on my cell at 504-460-6200. That's 1-800-DIVER-55 and 504-460-6200. Visit us at our website, www.divelawyer.com, or the DeLeese & Hall Facebook page. This is Bobby DeLeese signing off. We're DeLeese & Hall, the diver's attorneys. And remember, not all sharks swim in the sea. Thanks and dive safe.
But alas, we can't stay here for another hour because they will be closing soon. So we're going to share this last beer.
Will.
I know.
It's closing.
Oh, keep going. So one of the quick things that I want to talk about before we kind of closed her out. Before we wrap it up. You're doing some educational stuff, right?
Yeah.
Damn, that was so stupid. Why did I get tongue-tied right there? You're like doing stuff with like a school. You're starting a school.
Oh,
you're helping with it, right?
Yeah, we're helping with partnering up with a college up north, and I think you're going to be doing some chitter chatter with the main guy that's going to be introducing the program. So I'm just going to like the small beams, a small picture of the big small part of the big picture. But I think that the program is great. For a brand new divers that's going to be going to dive school, they get to not only do they get to leave as a deep sea diver or you know what have you, they get to learn and acquire a technical skill credential. I'm getting tongue tied too. One less beer.
Poseidon Brewing Company, everybody.
Yes. But it's a seven months long school, That's going to be happening almost every 4 months, I guess, in sequence, kind of like that. Nice. They have ROV classes, DMT classes, and they have a lot of, what do you call it, the businesses that's like UAV and all this other survey nice. Teams and, you know, technical entities that's going to be teaming up with the college that's up north in California. And I think it's a great opportunity. I wish they did that with the Navy. Navy, do not do that. We kind of first have to kind of get the very basic training, and then you learn everything from on-the-job training, right, or JT.
Right.
And hey, you know, if you want to, you want to learn how to ROV, yeah, kind of thing. But the program that they're establishing in this college, they will be gearing towards technical skills. And it's not just only for the baby divers, but any other crusty divers that's out there that wants to hone in and expand their education, they should follow up with the college here that's standing up. I think you'll be talking with Tim, and he could expound on the details, what's going on. And we're still in a planning phase, and the colleges are super excited. Everybody that's involved in the program is super excited to work that out. They have a DMT programs. That's 2 weeks long. They have an AUV program that's 2 to 4 weeks long. Archaeologist diving program.
Oh, that's
I know.
I'd like to do that one.
I know. If I could do over, I would be. There's only 2 Navy scientific divers. So if you have a biology degree and if you want to be a scientific diver, we need you, right? Because nice. Anytime you want to drop an anchor or a concrete block for the anchors, somebody's got to go do a survey. Because I got to go to some exotic places like Wake Island.
No way.
Yeah, that was pretty. Awesome. Pretty awesome. And you know, they needed to replace an anchor chain, and they couldn't just drop it in the ocean, so we had to go count the like a fish called a wrasse or something, like a Napoleon wrasse or something like that. It's like a big fish, and get to count corals and stuff like that. So but there's only 2 in the Navy, and I think one may have retired by now. So if you look for a job, that'd be a great opportunity. They have a certification working with the, I think, the ADCI diver tenders. They have all this other ROV courses that's developing welding classes and all the OSHA classes, basic rigging. There's like a whole bunch of technical stuff that.
Your basic dive school stuff.
Yeah, basic dive school stuff. That, but you get the additional certification, and you should be able to be very proficient. In you know, be valuable for the workforce that's out there.
And you know what? I'm hoping to see some CB divers in the commercial field. So if you're listening and you are a CB diver, you know, and you want to take the plunge into commercial diving,
we do.
Unintended.
We do a lot of things that I think the CB diving is more conducive and more laterally transferable to commercial diving. You know, we do concrete work, we weld, we could, you know, rig stuff, we're riggers, you know. We could jet things in, out, whatever, you know. So I think a lot of the guys there, you know, they were, because, you know, in the Navy, the diving is a niche, right? Unfortunately, it's a niche. But there is life if you want to continue with your commercial. And then I finally got to work with a lot of commercial diving companies and teams. And it's amazing that there were so many, you know, prior military guys that's been added to the workforce and civilian workforce that, you know, get to share, you know, some of the experience that we have and be an asset. So I always tell the guys, you know, don't be afraid. You know, we're not like one of those athletes that's NFL guys, like, it's all I know is football and I can't do nothing else. You know, there's jobs out there, you know. I see you guys, and, you know, I got to hear your story, all the little things that you guys do. Well, not little, but, a big part of the business that you guys do, that you guys did share, I think it's amazing. We don't see that And it's not that it's secret, but because you guys have this podcast, which is one of the first that I've even, you know, came across, and I appreciate you guys sharing your information to the younger guys and, you know, and the salty guys too. But I'm like been like sharing your information to people like, you know, younger divers that's in that's contemplating, you know, because it's not everybody wants to do 20 years in the Navy. You know, they want to do cool stuff like, you know, commercial and continue on diving and do badass stuff. But they don't know where to go to because it's just not advertised as well. Right. I think, you know, it's kind of, you guys are out there. We know we're out there, but if you ask some, you know, Joe Schmacatelli off the street and say, hey, name some commercial diving company, and they'd be like, I don't know. So we appreciate your service. We appreciate your, you know, sharing all the information that you guys have. And I'm doing my due diligence and try to share to the younger guys. Hey, you know, you guys need to listen up because there's a lot of information out there and there's a lot of job opportunities. And don't feel like if military isn't the only thing, don't just, you know, crumble. Rise up.
Yeah.
You know?
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. You know, and if you're listening out there, always feel free to reach out to us. We can point you in the right direction.
Yes.
You know, we've got plenty of experience in the field, but we don't always have the answers. But we do know people that do have answers to your questions. We do know people that can point you in the right direction. We do know people that can help you, you know, further your dive career.
There is no such thing as a dumb question. If you don't ask the question, then it's your fault.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, don't be scared.
Yeah, cheers.
These guys are awesome. They're super friendly. They don't bite. They look kind of hard on the outside, but I think they're mushy on the inside.
Definitely am not mushy.
Liars.
Keep listening to the Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack, and we will see you on the next episode. Man, I am getting tongue-tied all over the place. Damn Poseidon beers. So delicious. We will see you on the next episode of the Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack. Have a good night.
Beautiful.
All right. Awesome.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack. Make sure you like and follow on our social media pages on Instagram and Facebook. Please share this podcast with your friends or anyone interested in commercial diving. The only way that we can make this successful is if we do get a lot of people that are listening. We get more listeners, we get more sponsors, and that means more free stuff for you guys. That's right. We are hooking up all of our diver brothers and sisters in the trade, and if you keep sharing and liking, we're able to do that a lot more. Our Instagram is at BottomDwellersDS. Our Facebook is Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack. And you can always like and follow me at LB Diver on both. The Bottom Dwellers Dive Shack is available on all podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Anchor. We also have it streaming on our website at thebottomdwellers.com. So keep listening, keep it safe, keep it salty. This is LB Diver, out.